An Inspector General report says recruiters skip steps designed to screen out extremist enlistees, and tensions grow in the South China Sea. All that and more today, August 8th, 2023. Good morning, early birds. I'm Simone Perez, and this is the Early Bird Brief, produced by Defense News and Military Times. First up, there were more flare-ups in the South China Sea over the weekend, and that resulted in the Philippine government summoning China's ambassador to protest actions taken by China's Coast Guard. The Philippine military condemned a Chinese Coast Guard ship's use of a water cannon to block a supply boat. The boat was moving food, fuel, and other supplies to a small Filipino-occupied area in the South China Sea. The tense confrontation on Saturday at the Second Thomas Shoal was the latest flare-up in the long-seething territorial conflicts involving China, the Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, Taiwan, and Brunei. Philippine Navy personnel on board two supply boats were escorted by Philippine Coast Guard ships. That's when Philippine military officials say a Chinese Coast Guard ship approached and used a powerful water cannon to block the Filipinos from the shoal that China also claims. The armed forces of the Philippines said China violated the 1982 UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. Officials in Manila would not say if any sailors were injured. Here's why it matters. China claims ownership over virtually the entire South China Sea, but that opposes international rulings that invalidated Beijing's vast territorial claims. The Permanent Court of Arbitration in 2016 ruled against China, but Beijing rejects that ruling. China has long demanded that the Philippines withdraw its small group of naval forces and tow away the actively commissioned but crumbling BRP Sierra Madre. The Navy ship was deliberately marooned on the shoal in 1999 and now serves as a fragile symbol of Manila's territorial claim to the atoll. But Philippine officials emphasized again that the country would not withdraw those forces. The United States immediately expressed support to the Philippines and renewed a warning that it's obliged to defend its longtime treaty ally when Filipino public vessels and forces come under any armed attack, including in the South China Sea. While the U.S. lays no claims to the South China Sea, it has often deployed its warships and fighter jets in patrols and military exercises with regional allies. U.S. officials regularly say upholding freedom of navigation in the region is in the national interest. In another important story, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin issued guidance earlier this month for how the Department of Defense workforce can reorganize leadership roles. It comes as a result of Senator Tommy Tuberville's ongoing hold on military confirmations. Austin recommended a series of steps to mitigate the consequences of the hold in a recent memo. For instance, he wrote in extraordinary cases, lower-level officers in a grade of 08 or below who are not in the normal line of succession may be assigned to head organizations. That would be in an acting capacity, provided they have not been or will not be nominated for the head position. Here's why it matters. The guidance comes as now two military service branches are without a Senate-confirmed leader. General David Berger, the now former Commandant of the Marine Corps, retired last month without a confirmed successor. Also, Chief of Staff of the Army, General James McConville, left his role last week without a confirmed replacement. Those nominated to replace the two are pending Senate confirmation. During Conville's relinquishment ceremony last week, Austin reiterated the importance of having confirmed military leaders.
Unfortunately, today, for the first time in the history of the Department of Defense, two of our services will be operating without Senate-confirmed leadership. And as you heard Secretary Warmus say earlier, 301 nominations for our general and flag officers are being held up. So let me be clear. In our dangerous world, the security of the United States demands orderly and prompt transitions of our confirmed military leaders.
Tuberville has said his hold on military promotions is in response to the Pentagon's recent policy that provides leave time for troops to travel to receive abortion and other reproductive health services. Pentagon spokesman Brigadier General Patrick Ryder told reporters yesterday Austin has spoken to Tuberville regarding the hold several times since March. In his guidance, Austin wrote that the incumbent heads of organizations may be asked to remain in place until their successor is nominated, confirmed, and appointed. Among other guidance, he also wrote officers in a deputy or vice position may assume the head role in an acting or temporary capacity, regardless of whether they have been or will be nominated for the head position. Many other roles may soon be left without confirmed replacements. Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Michael Gilday and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Mark Milley are both slated to exit from their positions in the coming months. In other news, the Pentagon Inspector General found that military recruiters sometimes skip steps designed to prevent enlistees with gang affiliations or ties to political extremism from entering the force. For more on this, military veterans and journalism fellow Nikki Wentling joins the episode today. So Nikki, could you describe what the Inspector General is saying about the steps some military recruiters were not making that were designed to prevent these kinds of individuals from entering into the armed forces?
You know, the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol resulted in hundreds of people being charged with crimes, and 14% of those were veterans or service members. So the presence of people there that day who had served in the military or were serving in the military prompted Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to take a harder look at extremism in the ranks. So at that point, he developed more standard screening processes for military recruits that he ordered all of the service branches to use. So for this report released today, the DOD Inspector General decided to take a hard look at how those new processes were being put into practice. So various steps of the process were completed inconsistently, they found, with some recruiters skipping different parts. So the inspectors actually applauded Navy recruiters for consistently going through this process, but they found shortfalls with how the Army, Air Force, and Marine Corps implemented it. The Inspector General, Robert Storch, you know, said if the military isn't completing all these steps, then recruiters are missing opportunities to identify applicants with criminal or extremist gang associations. And that means some people with those affiliations might slip through, which increases the likelihood of, you know, security risks and disciplinary problems down the road. So some things they were skipping were, you know, the Air Force and Army are required to ask recruits if they've ever had associations with extremist or hate organizations or gangs. And then they check their responses as yes or no. And Air Force recruiters didn't do that in 22% of cases, and the Army didn't do it in 45%. And then recruiters all across all the branches didn't complete certain things like tattoo screenings or fingerprint checks. And then in one case, a recruiter didn't initiate a background investigation into an applicant who should have been subjected to one.
What's been the reaction to these findings, whether from the Inspector General or also others?
Sure. So, you know, I guess, first of all, the military did respond. The Inspector General's office called on the Pentagon to, you know, issue a new memo to recruiters, like reiterating the importance of screening applicants for these ties to extremist groups and gangs. And the Army, you know, actually put one out as a reminder to recruiters about why this is important. And then each branch agreed to establish periodic reviews of how their recruiters are handling this process. And those are expected to be put in place by early 2024. I also talked to an analyst at the SOFON group, which is an intelligence and security group that has been looking at disinformation and how it's affecting veterans in the military. And the analyst over there, you know, said these findings were deeply concerning. And it underscored the need for the military to modernize its recruiting and screening processes. And, you know, he basically said that, you know, military training is highly valued by these extremist groups, and so that this is a problem the military needs to address.
Thanks, Nikki. For more conversations like that one, please like and follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Also on the radar today, the Navy is modifying its maternity uniform pilot program. Pregnant sailors will be able to choose the uniforms that accommodate their work environment best, rather than receive one of each type of maternity uniform and a standard cardigan. According to a spokeswoman for the Chief of Naval Personnel, the update aims to reduce sea bag requirements because pregnant sailors reported they didn't wear all the uniforms issued. The pilot program launched in 2022, and it now offers pregnant sailors several uniform combinations that include some mix of Navy working uniforms, service uniforms, dress uniforms, and a cardigan sweater. No design changes to the uniforms are included in this recent update. However, a spokeswoman said that a, quote, improved service dress blue top will be included in the maternity uniform inventory soon. The Navy announced that the creation of the maternity uniform pilot program in 2021 to provide pregnant sailors with maternity uniforms at no cost. Sailors return them to the service once they are no longer pregnant. The program has so far served more than 850 sailors. And now, here's some other stories that we're hearing chirps about. Just a reminder to all veterans that tomorrow, August 9th, is an important day when it comes to the promise to address Comprehensive Toxics Act, better known as the PACT Act. It is the last day that veterans can apply for payouts to potentially be eligible for retroactive benefits back to August 2022, when the bill was signed into law. Those who enroll after tomorrow would only be eligible to receive payouts back to their date of filing. The Wall Street Journal reported that four U.S. destroyers were dispatched to monitor the situation after a combined Russian and Chinese naval force patrolled near the coast of Alaska last week. Cambodia's king yesterday formally appointed his son, the country's army chief, to succeed him as the nation's leader later this month after their party sealed victory in a one-sided election last month. And Reuters is reporting that North Korean hackers breached a top Russian missile maker. And on this day in history, in 2000, the wreckage of a Confederate submarine that was lost during the American Civil War was raised from the ocean floor off the coast of South Carolina. The sub, known as the Hunley, was the first submarine to sink an enemy warship in wartime. That's it for us this morning. To get more top stories and breaking news, go to defensenews.com/EBB to subscribe to the Early Bird Brief newsletter. Please give us a like, rating, and a comment wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow us on social media at @defense_news and at Military Times. This episode of the Early Bird Brief is hosted and produced by me, Zimone Z. Perez. Today's episode features stories by the Associated Press, Jonathan Lehrfeld, Nikki Wentling, and Diana Stancy. Our editor-in-chief is Mike Gruce. Have a great day.